Good evening, we're learning Parshat Vayera. Our parsha takes us from Moshe approaching Paro after the Jewish people have been forced to suffer more and more. Moshe will approach him a second time, and this time the plagues are going to begin. And so we're going to have seven plagues in our parsha and three in next week's parsha. It's easy to remember. The first two letters of Vayera are Vav and Aleph. The numerical value of Vav is 6, Aleph is 1. That comes out to 7. We have 7 plagues in our parsha. Parshat Bo, the first two letters of the parsha are Beis and Aleph. Beis is 2, Aleph is 1. You have 3 plagues in Parshat Bo. So, our parsha begins with Hashem rebuking Moshe Rabbeinu. We had learned last week that Moshe complained, "Why did you send me? Ever since I came, things only got worse. Vatzelo itzalta, and you didn't save the Jews, they're suffering." And Hashem says, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov didn't question me. I missed them. It's a way of saying what you did is wrong. You shouldn't be questioning me. I will keep my covenant to them. And you're going to see, I've heard the cry of the Jewish people, and you tell them that there's going to be a process now, 5 stages of redemption. And we know there are 4 terms of redemption. And then Hashem describes how we will come to the land of Israel, the 5th term. But we view it as 4 terms of redemption, and the 5th is a future entrance to the land of Israel. So we focus on the 4 terms of redemption. Votzeiti, Hashem says, I'll take you out of the suffering. Vitzalti, I will save you from the servitude. Vegalti, I will redeem you. Leave Egypt. Velakachti, I will take you to be my nation. Those are the 4 terms of redemption. Corresponding to those 4 terms, we have many concepts of 4 with the redemption from Egypt and on the Seder night. We speak about 4 sons. We drink 4 cups of wine. We ask 4 questions. We have many things that revolve around the number 4 on the Seder night. It all starts with the 4 terms of redemption, which are really 4 stages to redemption. Hashem says, you will recognize me as Hashem, and then I will bring you to the land of Israel. When the Jewish people don't keep their end of the deal, they don't recognize Hashem, they serve a golden calf. They don't recognize Hashem, they listen to the spies and say, we don't want this. So then the 5th term of redemption gets postponed. Moshe tells the Jewish people that things are going to get better, and they can't even hear him. Things are so tough. They're not prepared to hear that. Hashem sends Moshe to Paro, and tells him, tell him to send my Jewish children out of Egypt. And Moshe says to Hashem, if the Jews couldn't listen to me, how's Pharaoh going to listen to me? They have an interest in listening to me, and I couldn't succeed in getting them to listen. Certainly, Pharaoh won't listen. And furthermore, you see, my speech isn't good. So Moshe Rabbeinu assumes it's his weakness that caused the Jews not to listen. The Pasuk said, why didn't they listen? They were so worn down they couldn't listen. But Moshe doesn't view it that way. Moshe says, it's my speech impediment. Before we continue the story, the Torah describes the genealogy of Moshe and Aaron, the involvement of the families of Israel leading to Moshe and Aaron. And we begin. We're up to Shlishi. Now the story begins. Moshe gets sent to Paro, and Moshe says to Hashem, I can't speak well. How's Paro going to listen? Hashem tells Moshe, I've given you the power, you're going to be in charge of Pharaoh. You're going to walk in, and when Moshe walks in, the guards can't touch him. The lions that are there can't touch him. Everything freezes in Moshe's presence. Everyone's in awe. And Hashem tells Moshe, Aaron, your brother, he will be your interpreter. And we described the scene last week. Moshe is told by Hashem, you will punish Paro. you are now going to be my representative to judge and punish Paro. You'll speak, Aaron will interpret. You'll speak, Aaron will tell Pharaoh what you said. And I'm telling you now, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and this is so that there will be great miracles in Egypt. What's about to happen is, the Egyptians are supposed to recognize Hashem is God. The Jews are supposed to recognize Hashem is God. The Jews are supposed to recognize that they're a separate nation from the Egyptians. There's a process that's going to happen the next year. The plagues took place over the span of a year, 12 months. And what's going to happen over this year is, firstly, everyone will recognize that Hashem is in control because Egypt was the center for sorcery and magic and every form of sleight of hand. So if Moshe could come to Egypt and bring the Egyptians to declare this is a hand of God, so then the world will have to recognize it is. The idea that it's happening in Egypt is because Egypt are the best at doing all these tricks, and they're going to validate it. So that's also why initially Hashem allows the Egyptians to replicate the plagues. Hashem wants to bring them to the arena. If off the bat Hashem would have made plagues that the Egyptians couldn't replicate, then the sorcerers would have simply said, yeah, we can do that, we're not even going to bother. What Hashem did was Hashem allowed the Egyptians to initially feel like they could compete, and then Hashem will bring them down to their knees. So Moshe throws his staff to the floor and it becomes a tanin, whatever that is, a crocodile, a snake. The Egyptian sorcerers, they throw their staffs to the floor and they also become snakes. And then Moshe says, okay, Aaron's staff. And then Aaron takes the staff and it becomes a stick. And then the stick goes around and swallows up all the snakes that are there. So that's something which the Egyptians can't compete with. Where'd all their snakes go? So our sages say that when Aaron did that sign, when he first threw the stick on the floor and it turned into a snake, Pharaoh said, you think that's going to impress me? He called his wives. He says, you do that. And they did it. He called the kids. He said, you do that. And they did it. Pharaoh said, you're coming into a city of sorcery and you're going to impress me with that. And then so Pharaoh's sorcerers do it, and then Aaron's staff goes around and swallows everyone else's snakes. So now they have nothing to say, but Paro hardens his heart and he's not listening. So Moshe is sent to Pharaoh in the early morning. Pharaoh used to tell people he was a deity, he was a god, and that he never needs to go to the bathroom. Remember, he's a midget, he's the size of a Coke bottle, right? And he's got a long beard, his male organ is longer than his own height, it reaches the floor, he has to wear this big skirt, that's what the Gemara says. I guess he must have worn a big skirt. And Rabbi Feinstein says what the Gemara is telling us is that Pharaoh's lust was more than his whole identity. That he reached a point where the Gemara wasn't discussing a physical existence. The Gemara was discussing, when the Gemara describes that his male organ is longer than his own height, the Gemara is describing something about the way Paro developed his personality. A man who could slaughter babies and bathe in their blood is a man who was so into his physical desires, nothing else existed, to the point where his whole existence was overtaken by his lusts. So that's how Rabbi Feinstein explained that Gemara in Moed Katan. Coming back to here. So Pharaoh would go into the Nile, ostensibly he's a god, the Nile's a god, I don't know how they're connecting or praying or whatever. Pharaoh would go into the Nile, do his needs and come out, and then, you know, tell everyone that he doesn't do his needs. So he's going out into the Nile. Moshe is going to come out and stand at the edge of the Nile waiting for Pharaoh. He's holding the godly staff. And then he's going to tell Pharaoh, Hashem, the God of the Hebrews, sent me, send my nation to serve me in the desert. You have not yet listened. So says Hashem, here is the first proof you will know that I am in charge of the world. I'm going to hit the water of the Nile with my staff, and the water will all turn to blood. And all the fish that's in the Nile will die, and the Nile will become rancid, and the Egyptians won't be able to drink water from the Nile. Okay? So, the servants are waiting on the side. Pharaoh goes into the Nile. Moshe comes out and gives a speech to Pharaoh. And then Aaron takes the staff and he raises it over the Nile. And all the waters turn to blood. The fish die. The Nile becomes soiled. And no one can drink the water of the Nile. So, what's the idea here? We described how the Egyptians wouldn't let the Jewish women bathe, so that when they'd menstruate, they'd remain bloody, and the men would stay away from them. So Hashem made all the Egyptian waters bloody. The Egyptians believed that the Nile was a god, so Hashem began by showing them, you think the Nile is a source of life, I'll show you how the Nile is a source of death. You think you live off of the Nile and the fish live off of the Nile, I'll show you that the Nile will not give life. So the Nile turns to blood. So that's the first plague, and the first plague right away shows them that what they believed was the force of Egypt was now irrelevant, was harmful to Egypt. The pasuk describes that the Egyptian sorcerers did the same. Where'd they get water from? So the classical medrash that your kids will tell you, is that all the waters in Egypt turned to blood. Every water people had in the homes and in the wells and anywhere you had water turned to blood. And the only way the Egyptians could get water was if they'd leave the country or if they'd buy the water from a Jew. And there's a famous medrash. The Egyptian would come to a Jew and see that he's holding water. So he'd say, give me that. And he'd grab the cup from the Jew's hand and it would turn to blood. He'd look at the blood. Take it back. It'd come to the Jew's hand. It would turn to water. So he'd say, okay, you hold it, I'll drink. The Jew would hold it, he'd drink, it would turn to blood. So he'd say, okay, we'll both put in straws. You know, they take pieces of hay. The Egyptian and the Jew would suck from the same cup. The Jew would get water, the Egyptian would get blood. The only way the Egyptian could get water, the Medrash says, was if he paid for it. If he paid the Jew for the water, then he could have water. So the sorcerers bought water and they were able to turn that into blood. Okay, Pharaoh's unimpressed. 7 days, the Nile is bloody, and then the plague is over. Hashem says to Moshe, go come to Pharaoh and tell him, Hashem says, send my nation, they should serve me. And if you refuse, then I will plague your boundary with tsefardeim. Again, the classical understanding, what are tsefardeim? Frogs. There are those that say that tsefardeim are crocodiles. So the tsefardeim will enter everyone's homes and their beds and your ovens, and you're all going to suffer. Moshe warns him. How long does he warn him for? So the Medrash says for weeks he would warn him, and then 1 week would be the plague. And then again he'd warn him for weeks, and 1 week the plague. We have Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, divide up the plagues into three series. Ditzach, Dam Tzvadekinim, right? It's an acronym. Ditzach, Dam Tzvadekinim. Adash stands for Orov Devershin. Adash. Be'achav, Barad Arbe Choshech Bechoros. Be'achav. So in the Haggadah we mention this. Ditzach, Adash, Be'achav. Rav Hirsch points out that they are series. The first two of each series, there'd be a warning. The third, there'd be no warning. Dam Tzverdea, before the blood and the frogs, Moshe warns Pharaoh repeatedly. Finally comes the week when there'll be the plague. Kinim, there's no warning. It just hits. The Medrash says this is the opposite of how human beings wage war. When human beings wage war, they try to hide everything. They try to make sure that the enemy doesn't know what they're doing next. When Hashem wages war, He tells them, this is what I'm doing. I'll give you 2 weeks' warning. Prepare yourself, because this is what's going to happen. And they can't stop it. That's another phenomenal thing the Jews are seeing. They thought the Egyptians had all these powers, and here they can't stop Hashem. So the Egyptians and the Jews are seeing this firsthand. So this is also a learning a learning period for the Jews this whole year. Okay, the Pasuk says, Aaron raised his hands over the waters of Egypt, and the Tzifardeya came out. What is the Tzifardeya? Two opinions in the Medrash. One opinion is it's talking about the frog in general. The frog covered Egypt. Another opinion says there was one massive frog. A huge frog came out of the Nile. And so the Egyptians saw this huge Godzilla frog coming out of the Nile. They all took their clubs and they started hitting it. And every time they'd hit it, a bunch of little frogs would come out of it. So they'd hit it, and more little frogs would come out. Okay, whichever way you go, it says the sorcerers, they did their magic, and frogs came out of the Nile. So we could do that too. Okay, more frogs in Egypt. The problem was that people couldn't eat and couldn't drink and couldn't sleep. I mean, everywhere they went, they had frogs jumping up their pants. Did you guys ever have, I don't know if you ever experienced this, we once had a dead cat in our miklat, in our bomb shelter. So I went down into the bomb shelter and I see the cat, and I went to take something out of the bomb shelter, and I didn't realize that I stepped over the dead cat. And the dead cat was covered with fleas. I suddenly feel myself being bitten all over. So I made a very bad mistake. I ran back into the house. The next thing I knew, the house was infested with fleas, not only me. And everywhere you looked, you saw these little black dots jumping, you know, and biting us. Everywhere we went, we'd suddenly get bitten. Now, this happened at like 7, 8 o'clock at night. I couldn't get an exterminator until the next day. We literally left the house. Literally, we spent the night, I think, on Rav Tzvi Yehuda Street. Because every second we were in the house, we were getting bitten. Imagine frogs climbing up your leg. You try to go to sleep at night. They're crawling all over your face. It says they would try to bake things. They jump into the batter. They take their bread out of the oven. They'd have frog legs sticking out of here and out of there, and then a mushed up frog inside. Saying everywhere they looked, they had frogs jumping in their face and all over. It says they'd open their mouth and a frog would jump down their throat and live. And then they'd feel him like jumping around their throat. They'd try to swallow him. They'd feel him jumping around their stomach until he'd die. I'm saying, this is what the Medrash says. It was torturous to live in Egypt then. Saying, so they imagine that you're living in Egypt, and all you hear is this massive gribbit, 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 right? There are frogs all over. It's, you know, and it doesn't help. You know, it's like when you have, you know, you try to beat a rat, right? But then you discover there are 500 rats in your house. What are you going to do? Chase after all of them, you know, beat them all up? It's not going to work, especially when there are millions outside your door. Now, the classical approach, the classical medrash is that every plague only hit the Egyptians. Okay, that's what your kids will come home with. That if you went into Goshen, it was peaceful, it was quiet, the Jews had no problems with frogs. But the Egyptians, they couldn't sleep at night. When we were in elementary school, so the Rebbe would describe a meeting at the UN. Pharaoh would come to a diplomatic meeting, and he'd show up to the meeting, and they'd see his stomach jumping all over because he had frogs in his stomach too. Now, there was no way his guards could keep his palace clean. There was nothing that what are you going to do? There's nothing they can do. So Pharaoh over here was equated with the lowest of the low. Meaning if in the slums you have rats, you don't expect to have rats in the palace. But when the whole country is infested, then suddenly Pharaoh is no different than the simplest worker. You know who's different? The Jew. Suddenly, everyone has to recognize there's a difference here. Something's different. What's going on here? We thought Pharaoh was the powerful sorcerer. We thought we had all the magicians. We thought we had it all covered. And it's not working. So this time, Pharaoh summons Moshe and Aaron, and he asks them, pray to Hashem, he should remove the frogs from me and my nation. Remember, Pharaoh was plagued here too. And I'll send the nation, and they will serve Hashem. So Moshe asks Pyro, he says to him, why don't you make it impressive? When do you want me to pray for? They'll only remain in the Nile. So Pyro thinks, and he says to himself, must be that Moshe knows that in the coming minutes, it's going to end anyways. So I'm not going to tell him now. He's expecting me to say now. I'm not saying now. Pyro says, tomorrow. So Moshe says, okay, that's what you asked for. Fine, tomorrow you'll suffer one more day. No problem. And he says, I'll do like you asked, so that you know there are no forces like Hashem, our God. Meaning, whatever you want. Another opinion says that Pyro didn't imagine that Hashem could do it so quickly. He wanted to say now, but he thought that's a ridiculous request. So he said tomorrow, because he imagined until all the sorcery gets done or whatever, you can't do it right away. So Moshe said, fine, tomorrow, like you asked. Okay. Moshe and Aaron leave Pyro, and Moshe prays to Hashem right away. He won't pray in Egypt, because in Egypt there are idols. You're not supposed to say holy things in a defiled area. Defiled could mean there are feces. Defiled could mean there's immodesty. Defiled could mean there are idols in the room. There are idols where a person can see them. So Moshe leaves, and only when he's outside the area where the Egyptians have their idols, he leaves the capital. There he's going to daven. So Hashem makes it that all the frogs die. The next day, throughout Egypt, there are millions of dead frogs. So the Egyptians start shoveling them, and all over Egypt you have stinky, rotten, dead frogs piling the streets. Now Pharaoh sees that the plague passed, so he hardens his heart. Now, when we read about Pharaoh, we have to see the message for ourselves. I'm in the middle of reading or listening on Audible to a book about the Rebbe of Chabad, written by Rabbi Tulushkin. Very interesting book, very, very interesting book. So he quotes over there a story that there was a girl who was orphaned at a young age, and she asked the Rebbe to be her adopted father. And then when she went to university, so she was supposed to write a paper. So she wrote a paper about Chabad. The class, I guess, was something like sociology. So she was talking about the impact of the minority. So she wrote the paper titled "The Minority of the Minority." Jews are the minority of the population in America, and Chabad is the minority of the population of the Jews. So she wrote about Chabad, she called it the minority of the minority. So as part of her paper, she wrote a story that there was once a soldier that had to go to the army. I don't remember in what country. I think it was in Korea, either Korea or Vietnam. I think Korea. And he went to the Rebbe before he went to the army, and he asked for instructions. The Rebbe told him, try to keep whatever mitzvot you can. You're in the army, whatever you can, try to keep. So he was with his platoon, and they stopped to eat lunch, and he went to a nearby stream to wash his hands before he sits down to eat. Whether he had kosher food or not, I don't know. But he knew he was supposed to wash his hands before he eats. He went to wash his hands by the stream. By the time he got back, a shell hit where they were all sitting. Everyone was dead but him. So she wrote the story. So when she came to the Rebbe, she gave him the paper, and she wanted his opinion on what she had written. She got an A, but the professor wrote a comment. So on that story, the professor wrote, so I'll tell you a story about a man who served in a tank, and he went out of the tank to do his needs, and just as he was doing his needs, a missile hit the tank and everyone died but him. So he writes this whole long thing. Now, she didn't want the Rebbe to see that, but she did want his opinion on the paper. So she gave him the paper, and to her surprise, he read through it. And when he reached that paragraph with the comment of the professor, so he said, no, an apikiris. Okay, he's an apostate, and went on. it struck me. Meaning, what happens with Paro? He's seeing things that should awaken him, should inspire him. He knows he doesn't have a good explanation, but he could find an explanation. He can give himself all kinds of answers. And so by doing that, he will ultimately reach the point where he will suffer it all, and then he'll have to give in. But the Torah describes it as he hardened his heart. And I think, perhaps, the Torah is teaching us where we all stand. It's not only about Paro. Paro represents the serpent. The serpent represents that desire that's hidden within every person, where a person can harden their heart. A person can say, okay, I'm not impressed, right? You can say that. And I think maybe that's why the Torah describes these parts of the story. So Paro sees and refuses to accept. The Medrash says there was once a servant who brought home his, the king asked him to bring fish. So he went out to the market and he bought a rotten piece of fish. So he brought it to the king. The king looks at the rotten piece of fish and he says, okay, if you brought me a piece of fish that's rotten, you were negligent in your task, you have three choices. Either you're going to pay a half a year's salary, or you're going to get 40 lashes, or you're going to eat that rotten fish. You choose. So he thinks about it and he says, okay, I'll eat the rotten fish. He takes the first bite and he's choking. He takes the second bite, he starts vomiting. By the third bite, he's vomiting his guts out. He finishes half the fish and he's vomiting and vomiting, and his stomach is all over the place. He says, I can't. So he says, okay, I'll take the lashes. So they bring him to the chamber and they start giving him lashes. One, he's yelling. Two, they hit 25 and he says, I can't, I'm going to die, I'm going to have a heart attack, I'll pay the money. So he ends up paying his 6 months salary. So look at the servant. He ate half the fish, he got half the lashes, and he still paid the final price. Chazal say that's Paro. He's going to suffer through all the plagues. He's going to lose the Egyptian economy. Everyone's going to suffer. Everyone's going to recognize Hashem is the king. And he will free the Jewish people. Meaning, ultimately, he will pay the price. But right now, we're following Paro through his journey of saying, I'm not giving in. So Hashem tells Moshe, tell Aaron to raise his staff over the earth, the dust of the earth, and the dust will turn to lice. So that, remember, this time there's no warning. Aaron hits the dust and Egypt is plagued with lice. You guys ever see lice? Okay. Lice are a creature that look like the, you know, those seeds that everyone likes eating in Israel. What are they called? Sunflower seeds? Sunflower seeds. Right? Sunflower seeds. You've seen sunflower seeds? Those like black seeds. So imagine a bug that looks like that and walks very slowly. Okay? Lice are a creature that walk very slowly. They don't fly, they jump a little bit, and they walk very slowly and patiently. They nest in a person's hair, and they bite him a little bit. They create this little itching sensation, but they lay their eggs, and wherever they go, they start biting, meaning they live at the roots of the hairs. So they can infest everything. They can infest people's clothing, they can infest people's pillows, they can infest people's hair and beard, and anywhere a person grows hair, which is much of the human body. And what you end up having is lice will infest the cattle, and lice bring disease with them, and they're biting people, meaning lice bite and take blood. They feed off of people. So You have these little slow walking creatures, meaning they walk very slowly. They're not in any rush to go anywhere. And they're not so easy to kill, by the way. Meaning you think you mush them in your hand, they're dead. Not so easy. You have to mush really hard before they're dead. It's not easy. Usually you... it's not easy. And they're disgusting. So now Egypt is covered with lice. Covered with lice, that means that you couldn't stand on the earth. All the earth was lice. There was no earth. You couldn't see the ground you were standing on. All you saw was black. Black, think of sunflower seeds, but they're all alive. So it's not like you can escape. They're climbing up your shoes. They're in your bed. If they thought the frogs were bad, now they're covered with lice. The guy's trying to sleep and he feels them crawling across his eyes. There's nothing they can do. Because Egypt is covered. The ground has all turned to lice. So it says that the sorcerers tried to do the same, and they couldn't. So one understanding is sorcerers can't deal with things that are so small. The other understanding is it's very hard, but they could have done it. Hashem interfered and didn't let them do it. So they come to Paro and they said, this is a finger of God.
When the sorcerer was trying to do this,
they were trying to show they could do it too. To show Pharaoh, this is not God.
And they are putting themselves twice.
They did it in a small scale. They didn't do it in a large scale like Moshe did.
So this plague was the last plague, or the two plagues that there was no forewarning, right?
On frogs there was, on the third plague there wasn't. On lice there was no forewarning. So again, this is a plague that affects everyone equally. The great equalizer. No one can say they're safe. Again, this is showing everyone that Paro is not such a force, the sorcerers aren't such a force. There's one force in the world. It's Hashem. Hashem tells Moshe, okay, we're up to round two. Finish the first set of three. We're going on to the second set. Go to Paro. He's going out to the waters. Tell him, Hashem sent me to tell you, send my nation to serve me, because if you don't, then I'm going to send against you, the big boss, your servants, and your nation, meaning from top down, there are going to be arov, all kinds of wild animals and snakes and scorpions. They're all going to attack Egypt. And they're going to enter your homes. Now, Moshe showed him that he can touch the most intimate parts of Paro's life, because in Paro's bed he had frogs and lice, and Moshe tells him they're going to be in your home. Until now, things were an annoyance. Now they're going to become deadly. We've upped the notch. And so you will then see that the land of Goshen is different, that no wild animals will enter there. And then you will have to recognize that I am Hashem who controls everything down below. You believe in all kinds of deities that are very far away. I'm right here, says Hashem. And that is one of the messages of the plagues. That Hashem is involved. That Hashem cares. That Hashem ultimately takes people to task for their behavior. We already learned last week the Midrash that says that because the Egyptians would make the Jews clean their own clothing of lice, and so the Jews would get infested with the Egyptian lice, that's why they got punished with lice. Because the Egyptians would send the Jews out to hunt wild animals, the Jews would get maimed hunting for the Egyptians, that's why they got this punishment, that the wild animals came into the cities of Egypt. Okay? Pharaoh doesn't budge, and wild animals attack. They first come to the palace. Imagine elephants, lions, leopards, snakes, octopus. The Medrash says there were animals that came out of the sea. Animals just started climbing into Egypt. And the Medrash says the Egyptians would lock their doors. And there was an animal like an octopus that had a very long hand, and it would extend its hand through the chimney, come down inside, unlock the door, open it, and the people and the animals would charge in. So it begins with the palace. you have hordes attacking the palace, and then the top servants of Paro, and then throughout Egypt, it's the wild animals are spreading out. So now everything's getting destroyed. You have a rampage. You have zebras and wild animals and wolves, lions, tigers. Everything's charging throughout Egypt. Okay, the destruction is fast. People are maimed, people are killed. This is a different level of a plague. If the first three plagues were difficulties, this is already people are getting killed and maimed, and the Egypt is getting destroyed. I mean, think of any city that you have a rampage of wild animals running through. So Paro summons Moshe and Aaron this time. He says, you guys bring your sacrifices right here. Right here, you bring your sacrifices here in Egypt. Moshe says, we can't do that. We're going to sacrifice your God. Now we're going to sacrifice the disgusting thing that you guys worship. How could we do that? The Egyptians will stone us. We got to walk 3 days into the desert. There we bring our sacrifice. Pharaoh says, okay, I'll send you later. Just don't go so far away. I need you to pray for me now. Moshe says, okay, I'll walk outside right now. Again, he has to exit the city. And I will pray to Hashem, and the wild animals will leave your palace. They will leave your servants. They will leave your nation. But stop playing with me. You have to let us go. He goes out, he prays, and the wild animals leave. Why didn't they all drop dead? Hashem said, why should they enjoy the fur and the leather of all these wonderful animals? So Hashem had all the animals run away. Paro again hardens his heart. Again, this is Paro doing. It's the decision a person makes. Am I in or out? Paro says, I'm out. So what have we had now? Dam Tzvede Akinim Arov, four plagues. We've gone from Nisan, and we're approaching Tishrei. Hashem tells Moshe, okay, come to Paro and tell him, so says Hashem, the God of the Hebrews, send my nation, they should serve me. Because if you refuse, so then it won't be external forces, it will be death. You will see a plague that will hit your cattle, your horses. The Egyptians were big into horses. Your donkeys. The Egyptians were big into donkeys. Your camels. Your cattle. Your sheep. The Egyptians were big into sheep. They believed their cattle was the supreme cattle. They even worshipped them. There will be a heavy plague. And again, you will see the Jews are not like the Egyptians. The Jews won't lose a single piece of cattle. And he gives them a warning. This is going to happen tomorrow. And that's what happens. Yeah.
The Jews needed to take their cattle and stuff into the house, right?
No. Not yet. Soon. It's going to be what you're saying. We'll see you soon. So, throughout Egypt, the cattle dies. All the cattle dies. There's no cattle left in Egypt. So now, it's as though the angel of death just struck their cattle. Meaning, throughout Egypt, you can't find a horse, a cow, a sheep. Everything's dead. Paro sends his men into Jewish territory in Goshen. And he says, find me one dead animal there. They can't find one. Not a single animal died that day. Paro insists he's not giving in. He doesn't send the nation. Okay? So, we've had Dam Tzvardea with a warning, Kinim no warning. Arov Dever with a warning. Now we're up to plague number six. Wait. Plague number six. And no warning. Shem tells Moshe and Aaron, take two handfuls of ash from the furnace, and Moshe will throw it to the heaven, and it will scatter all over Egypt, and all over Egypt people will break out in boils. So Aaron takes two handfuls of ash, and Moshe takes two handfuls of ash. Aaron then pours his two handfuls on top of Moshe's two handfuls, and shouldn't have been able to do that, right? This was a miracle in its own right. Moshe throws it to the heaven, and it starts scattering all over Egypt. And as it settles, everywhere it settles, people start breaking out in boils and fevers, and there's no cure. All the witch doctors of Egypt can't cure anything. So now, all over Egypt, people are starting to get covered with these, think of big, red, infected boils. People are getting plagued with fever. Now, Moshe didn't do this in private. He came and stood in front of Paro, and then he came with his pile of ash. Aaron poured on it his pile of ash. Moshe throws it to the heaven, and Paro sees the ash spreading all over Egypt. And as it lands, everyone is breaking out in boils and fevers. Sorry. The sorcerers, Paro's sorcerers, they can't stand in front of Paro. They themselves are so ill, covered with boils. And this time Hashem hardens Paro's heart. Now what happened at this point is we reached Rosh Hashanah. We've already covered half a year. And at this point, naturally, Paro should have given in. At this point, even Paro, with all his stubbornness, he should have given in. But Hashem hardens Paro's heart. But Hashem only hardens his heart. Everyone else gives in. At this point, when we hit plague number 6, all the Egyptians say, that's it. Hashem's the God. Hashem's fighting for the Jews. This doesn't make sense. And at that point on Rosh Hashanah, the Egyptians stop calling the Jews to work. Meaning at this point, we're holding 6 months before the redemption from Egypt. The Jews are already free, level 1. V'hotzeiti etchem mitachat tzivlot Mitzrayim v'hitzalti etchem me'avodatam. They've reached the stage where they're no longer working. From Rosh Hashanah till Pesach, they're going to spend the next 6 months free men, in the sense that they don't have to show up to work the next morning. The Egyptians have given up. Everyone concedes, we're not making the Jews work anymore. So at this point, that's what the Gemara in Tractate Rosh Hashanah tells us. Rosh Hashanah pasaka avodam avotinu b'mitzayim. On Rosh Hashanah, the Jews stopped working. Paro was ready to give in. Hashem hardened his heart. Why does Hashem harden his heart? So here we have multiple explanations. Rambam explains it's part of the punishment. There comes a point where Hashem says, I don't let you do tshuva. So imagine you're sitting at a Shabbos table and your son whacks his sister. So you say, why'd you do that? He says, oh, you weren't supposed to see that. His sister's crying. You tell him, don't do that again. He says, sure, Dad. He thinks you're not looking. A minute later, he yanks her ponytails. She's crying all over again. Why'd you do that? Dad, you saw that too. You weren't supposed to see that. Stop hurting your sister. You do that again, I'm sending you to the room. So the kid says, I'm sorry. Right. He thinks you're not looking. 2 minutes later, he yanks her ponytail again. Ow! You look at him. And he says, I'm sorry, Dad. I'm really sorry. I'm not going to do it again. Even if you give in to him one more time, there will come a point at which you tell him, no more, I'm sorry, it's over. Now you're going to pay for what you did. Right? There comes a point where you say, what's fair is to punish, and saying, I'm sorry, just won't work. So that's Rambam's interpretation. There comes a point where Hashem says, I'm not letting you say you're sorry. Part of the punishment is, a person can't step out of it. That's Rambam. Second interpretation is that there are two types of I'm sorry. There's an I'm sorry that says, I realize I'm wrong. I really regret it. Then there's I'm sorry, which is, I don't realize I'm wrong. I might do it all over again. But I better say I'm sorry, because otherwise I'm going to be in deep trouble. Two types of I'm sorry. There's real regret, and then there's the understanding of self-preservation. I better apologize, right? The guy who gets stopped for speeding. Does he really believe he's never going to speed again? Or is he saying to the officer, you know, I realize I shouldn't have done that. I don't know what came over me. I'm never going to do it again. Does he really believe that? Or is he trying out of self-preservation to ensure he doesn't get punished? So until this plague, if Pyro would have said, I'm sorry, I'll let them go, out of self-preservation, he could have done that. At this point, logic would have dictated he should have said that, just out of self-preservation. He should have said, I give in, God. I'm going to let them go. You're the boss. Not because he believed it, but he should have at least said it to save his country. He's about to lose everything. That Hashem didn't let him do. When Hashem hardened his heart, Hashem hardened his heart so that he could not give in for self-preservation. If he wanted to do real tshuva, if he wanted to say, the truth is Hashem's the boss and I should listen to him, he could have always done that. When Hashem hardened his heart, Hashem did not allow him to reach the logical conclusion he should have, that is that even if I don't want to buy into this, I should at least give in to save my country. That Hashem didn't let him do. At this point, his heart was hardened so that he could only do real tshuva. To say the right negotiating tactic to save his country, that he couldn't do. And that's where Hashem hardened his heart. And now we have finished the first six plagues. We're up to the final plague of the parasha. We finished the first two series of three. And now we're up to, we did the tzach. Adash, what's the next plague? Be'achav, the bays of Barod. So we're up to the hail, and we will pick up with that, Be'ezat Hashem, on Thursday night.